The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's hump day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to First Take. Thank you for hanging out with us. That was a heck of a tease, Stephen A. Smith. I'm fired up for today. Middle of the week, we're ready to go. Max Kellerman looking dapper as usual. And gentlemen, you know where we're starting. The Clippers. So Luka Doncic, a wrecking ball, 39-7-7, as he leads his Mavericks to a commanding 2-0 lead over Kawhi, Paul George, and the Clips. Keep in mind, both those games were back in L.A. Friday, they head back to their home turf, Dallas. Ty Lue, you getting concerned?
I'm not concerned. Like I said, they got to win four games. And, you know, you come in on an opposing team's floor and you play, there's no pressure on you to make shots because you're supposed to, you know, you just try to come in and steal a game or steal two games. But now they got to go home and try to keep up the same shooting. So it's easy to come on the road and do that when there's no pressure on you. So we'll see in game three.
There is none. You know, it's a competition. We got to rise to the occasion. You know, fact of the matter is, if we don't, we're done for. There's no level of concern.
No level of concern. Stephen A., is Kawhi the problem for L.A.?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And by the way, let me say this. We all know how much love and respect I have for Ty Lue. And Paul George is one of my favorite peeps and one of my favorite players. They both lying through their damn teeth. Don't lie to the American public like that and tell them you ain't worried. Hell yeah, you worry. You know why? Because you get, I'm going to say it on ESPN, you're getting your ass kicked. That's what's happening right now. That's what's going on with the Los Angeles Clippers. We've got a situation where Kawhi Leonard has dropped 41. I understand that. But this is why I'm not letting him off the hook, Max. And Max, you know where I'm going, baby. I'm very, very predictable with this. Ain't nobody questioning the greatness of Kawhi Leonard. A matter of fact, I'm asking for significant validation on both ends of the floor. Luka Doncic is the best player in this series. Period. 22 years old, second time in the playoffs, and busting their living, you know what. He gave it to you in the bubble. He put you on notice that he was there. Did you see the disrespect that he showed to the Clippers? I mean, Max, sitting up there, he cussing them out in Slovenian. Slovenian? I don't know what the hell he's
Slovenian. He's their European languages.
I mean, it's a European language.
None of us know.
Cussing them out, talking smack. Yo, Patrick Beverly, you too small. Yo, Kawhi, you can't deal with me. Whatever this person, you too damn slow. Talking smack to them. While dropping 39 on them, busting their little butt. And then, to accentuate the level of disrespect, this dude is literally shooting three-point shots off of one leg, leaning off his left leg, and then throwing like he's playing a game of horse. And playing with them, talking smack to them. Busting their little living, you know what? I know what Kawhi Leonard did in the first half. I understand he ended the game with 41, but when it really, really counted, where the hell was he? Couldn't be found. But you could find Luka, and I don't want to hear anything about Paul George. Paul George shot 54% from the field, even though it was only 1-for-7 from three-point range. Last time I checked, he's the second option. He did drop 28, okay? He showed up. Kawhi Leonard is the one with the crown dangling from his mirror. Kawhi Leonard was the one with the New Balance commercials in his convertible. Kawhi Leonard was the one that said, yo, King James, it's a new king in town. Last year, King James was waiting for him, okay? You gave up a 3-1 lead in the Western Conference semis and got bounced. And this year, on the same night that the king showed up in Phoenix with Anthony Davis, understanding they couldn't afford to fall a 0-2, they handled their business, and on that same night, Kawhi Leonard and the Los Angeles Clippers found themselves in a 2-0 hole to a Dallas Mavericks team that looks better, that has a 22-year-old who is better than anybody that they got right now and busting their living, you know what. I'm going to say it one more time so everybody understands that even though I know this is Disney, it's the Disney Channel, it's the kids, and we love the kids. Stevie loves the kids. He sure does. Bottom line is, Clippers getting their ass kicked. They better handle it.
You have a lot of shows. What show is this again?
Stephen A's World.
What show is this? Plus. What show is this?
This is First Take.
Okay, because I feel like we entered Stephen A's World just now, because only in Stephen A's World does a dude show up, drop 41, 6-4 with two steals, 9 out of 10 from the free throw line, 14 of 21. He's hitting 2/3 of his shot from the field, 4 of 7 from three.
Right.
Talk about 50-40-90 with 41 points. And in your opinion, he's the problem. It's not Kawhi Leonard is not the problem, Stephen A.
Okay.
Now, Paul George had a nice game, except, by the way, 4 minutes and change left in the game. He finds himself being guarded by Kristaps Porzingis on the perimeter. On the broadcast, they're yelling. They're yelling, put it on the floor. Now, you put it on the floor. It's a one-possession game.
Yep.
Who's going to stop you in the paint? It's a one-possession game. Instead, he shoots, misses, of course.
Yep.
Doncic the other way, 7-point game, right? So in key moments. Now, why are these things happening? You're blaming Kawhi. I'm blaming Ty Lue. Ty Lue is the issue right now. Now, he could make in-series adjustments, and he better, because it's not just that they're getting their you-know-what's kicked. It happened twice at home, as Molly points out. That's a problem. But Ty Lue is the issue. Why did you get Rajon Rondo? What was the point in bringing in Rondo? For these moments, to organize your offense, especially under pressure, to give yourself, when it matters most, a big three. How many minutes Rondo played last night? 19 minutes. Reggie Jackson played 30 minutes. Reggie Jackson, of all the starters, right? Reggie Jackson was minus, I'm forgetting already, minus a lot in 30 minutes. You know what Rondo was? He had the smallest, everyone's minus on the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. He had the smallest plus minus on the Lakers. In other words, when he was in the game, the Lakers operated better, excuse me, Clippers. The Clippers operated better, because he did this with the Lakers too, better, much better than with him out of the game. So let me ask you something.
Interruption.
Yeah.
Rondo was a plus 13.
Plus 13. Because the bench,
right.
The Clippers bench,
right.
He was plus 13.
Plus 13?
Right. Excuse me. Yeah. Reggie Jackson, I think, was the minus.
Plus 3.
Reggie was plus 3? All right, anyway. Rondo was better than Reggie. Right. There's a lot of plus minuses dancing around in my head right now.
Okay.
Rondo was plus 13. Why is Patrick Beverley starting? Why is Reggie Jackson getting that much burn? And why is Rondo languishing on your bench when the whole reason you brought him in was for this? You think it's just going to be ISO Paul George taking a jump shot over Kristaps Porzingis what could be a 1% if Rondo's in the game? Mm-hmm. You think all these things are going down the same way? It's not. That's not on Kawhi.
In fairness to your argument, I can understand where you're coming from, because Rondo definitely needed to play more than 19 minutes. That is what you brought him here for, Max. I don't disagree with your point, okay, in regards to that. I'm also not letting Marcus Morris off the hook. Here's why. Marcus Morris, you're a damn good player. He's a damn good player, and he's a glue piece to the squad. What the hell are you doing fouling out? Because you set in the move and pick, and you get your elbow or your arm up to somebody's face with under 4 minutes or around 4 minutes left in the game. You have any idea how pivotal you are? You know you got 5 fouls. You're a seasoned veteran. This is a playoff game. You can't make that kind of damn mistake, Marcus Morris. You better than that. That man is a good player, and you have glue pieces to every team. Marcus Morris is one of those players. You can't make that kind of mistake. So I thought that was a very valuable thing that happened. You can't foul out of that game. That's number two. But I'm going to get back to why I'm pointing the finger at Kawhi, because I'm not looking at just numbers. I know what Kawhi can do offensively. I know offensively in terms of his efficiency and what he brings to the table. This brother's top 5 talent in the world. I know how elite Kawhi Leonard is. But we also talked about his defense, and that's what made him special. He was an MVP in the finals because of his defense. Although LeBron averaged 28 against him, LeBron shot 37% from the field back in 2014. That helped, you know, and a lot of people credited Kawhi, obviously, with that, and he got league MVP. You came after you won the title in Toronto. You came to L.A. with that mantra, that reputation. And this dude, Luka, giving it to them. And I'm not talking about just giving it to you. I'm talking about talking smack to each and every one of you and your teammates. I'm talking about you as a leader. When we looked at LeBron last night, when he got in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's face, I want you to shoot the damn ball. Shoot. Got all in this mug. You look at the little elements that right. LeBron brings to the table.
That's
we'll
Rondo.
Have, we'll
wait,
that is not Kawhi.
That is Rondo's job. That's what he's there for. We knew that wasn't Kawhi. Yeah. That's why you
but
bring
that's what
Rondo
I'm calling
in.
Him out for.
The team defense is also on Ty Lue. It's not just a Kawhi issue. That's coaching. That
right.
And I want to clean something up real
sure.
quick.
Oh, really?
I was talking about plus minuses and stuff. All the Lakers. all the Clippers had minus, right? Because they were getting outplayed. The Clippers bench was outplaying the Dallas bench. But the guy with the lowest plus minus of the starters was Kawhi, minus seven. Everyone else was much worse. It wasn't him.
Okay.
And Rondo.
You got your point. Okay. You got your point.
So Max says it's coaching. You say it's Kawhi. I have one question for you.
Yeah.
So white men can jump.
Huh?
So white men can jump.
Some.
Yeah. Luka being one of them.
No, he can shoot. Luka can't really jump.
Luka's just alpha.
Let's get to the other L.A. squad. The Lake Show caught a break because Chris Paul was held out for most of the second half because of the right shoulder injury he suffered in game one. I felt sick for CP3 having to watch that game on the sideline. The young Suns came to play, but it wasn't enough. LeBron, how do you get AD going?
You said you were looking forward to seeing AD in game two, and obviously he had a much more aggressive game. What were you trying to do, in the game to get him maybe some looks or some opportunities for him to be more aggressive?
Give him the ball early, often, and always. It's that simple. He responds to games like game one. He's not a guy who talks about it. He's about it. You know, he goes out and do it. So, give him the ball early, often, and always.
No seven seeds ever won the NBA Finals in NBA history. Is that something that gives you extra motivation during this playoff run?
Well, for the group, we don't look for bulletin board, motivation. We're motivated because we're in the postseason again. And as a team, we have an opportunity to do something special. You know, no matter what seed you are, if you get into the postseason, you have an opportunity to do something special. And we're one of those 16 teams that made the postseason. So, we look forward to it.
All right. The Suns hung tough, but it wasn't enough. Safe to say, losing, not LeBron style. With him on the team, the Lakers are 6-0 in the postseason following a loss. They're also winning with a statement in those games. They're holding their opponents to less than 100 points. No word yet on Chris Paul's status for Thursday night's Game 3 in L.A. Stephen A., how do you feel about the Lakers after that win?
I'm very worried. I'm very worried. And the Lakers showed up like a champion last night. And I give them a lot of love and credit. It's not only Anthony Davis, that's obvious. LeBron, some big time shots. Andre Drummond showed up. And he played very well. And Dennis Schroeder, who was outstanding last night, deserves a lot of credit. But I got to tell you something about this Phoenix Suns team. The more I watch them, the more impressed I become by them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw out a name last night, Max, that nobody would think I would mention. That kid, Cameron Payne, filling in for CP3 because CP3's health was compromised and Monty Williams made the choice to sit him down because that wasn't CP's choice. He was trying to labor. He's trying to labor through it. Monty Williams was like, nah, you clearly hobbled. That showed you can't dribble the ball right, can't pass the ball right because that shoulder is really, really hurting him right now. And God bless him. I'm so sad for him because every time this guy can make that kind of a difference, the postseason time, somehow he always gets hurt. And I just feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something.
Snake bit.
This kid, Cameron Payne, showed up last night, lot of heart, had 19 points, 6 of 15 shooting, showed a lot of heart. Of course, you look at a guy like Devin Booker, and he's going to be what he's going to be because that's who he is. He dropped 31. But DeAndre Ayton, second game in a row, 11 for 13 from the field. That's 84% shooting. Shot 90% in the first game, had 21 points. Shot 84% last night. Finishes with 22 and 10. DeAndre Ayton, I'm looking at him. I'm looking at Cameron Payne. I'm looking at Bridges. I'm looking at Cameron Johnson. And where the Lakers got in trouble and they lost that 15-point lead is because those young Lions sat up there and said, y'all are bigger, but we don't believe you stronger. We damn sure know you ain't faster, and we going to get all up in you. And they got in the Lakers, got them real uncomfortable, and I found myself saying, I picked the Lakers to win this series in 7. I'm not going to jump off of it, but I'm looking at the Lakers going back to that arena for a game 7. And I said, oh, my God. And by the way, just as an aside, Max, the crowd there in Phoenix last night was fantastic. And then I'm looking at the Clippers have fake fan, whatever the props or whatever it is in the stands at the Staples Center. I'm like, what the hell is that? Okay, because remember, I was at the Staples Center last week for the playing game against the Warriors. That wasn't what was there for the Lakers game. Why the hell was it there for the Clippers game? That gives me back to Snoop. Clippers.
By the way, if the Clippers ever do playing the Lakers, it'll be packed with
I'm
Lakers
just saying,
fans,
I mean,
whether it's a Clippers
because
game
let
or
me
not.
Tell you something. That's a home court advantage.
Yeah.
Going into Phoenix, that crowd last night was sensational. They had me feeling hyped about basketball
being
back.
You ain't got to worry about a game seven. It ain't going to get to a game seven. You don't have to worry about a game seven. I thought originally it would. I don't anymore.
It would with Chris CP3 without question.
Look, you said him. That dude is snake bit, but I want to give you three reasons the Lakers got this. I'm confident. Number one, are we forgetting that toward the end of the regular season, no LeBron, Suns on a roll, AD gave him 42, and I think it was 15 in a win? Are people just forgetting that? Lakers beat them when they were squad up and the Lakers weren't. That's one. Number two, the Lakers just split on the road. You're good, man. You just took home court. You're good. When you go into someone else, the number two seed or the seventh seed, you go to their house and you get a split on the road to start the series, you're good. And three, you brought it up with CP3. I feel terrible for him. He's compromised. He's snake bit. I bring up Stephen A. We still butt heads about this one. I think if CP3 would have been available against Golden State when he was in Houston with Harden, they could have won that. I think they would have won that. But here he is again. He's clearly not going to be his normal self throughout the rest of this series. The coach is keeping him out of a game. He'll come back. He'll play. Are you expecting the best version of CP3? And let me tell you why that's a huge thing. Without CP3, you said Devin Booker, Book's going to do his thing. Not exactly. The difference with, like, Book can play on ball or off ball, just like CP3. They're great combo guard backcourt. But as you always call CP3, the quintessential point guard, that's right. Booker, even though he can do those things, is the quintessential mini Mamba. He's that off guard who will kill you. Once he is more responsible for the offense and he can't just do his Mamba thing, that makes him, he's still going to be great, but that's not the ideal role for Booker, even with Payne. That's not the ideal role for Booker. For all those reasons.
That wasn't it, though.
What's that?
That wasn't it, though. They were doubling Booker. They went big, and when you take away the interior, because you got such massive size with Drummond, with LeBron, with AD. When you do that, plus you're willing to double Booker.
Well, let me ask you.
Saying
I understand.
It still could have ended up similar in terms of his results. You might have gotten more production from somebody else.
Right, sure.
But they're clearly willing to take that chance
if you
because
have Booker,
Devin Booker is their version of Mamba.
If you have Booker on your team, you don't want to use him as a point guard. You would rather not. You would rather use him as just as a weapon.
I didn't view him as a point guard last night.
I think he had a little more ball
handling. I'm just saying, you know, they gave
the point
it to him
is,
to make a play for
okay,
himself.
All right, okay. But the fact remains, no LeBron, they win with AD. They got a split on the road, and now Chris Paul is compromised, whether you agree with that other point or not. Lakers are going to take this in six, maybe five, but I'll say six.
They got a lot of size, and I think that Monty Williams and Phoenix has to figure out a way to make the Lakers go smaller. See, it's one thing for you to go big. It's another thing entirely for you to stay big. You look at Anthony Davis. He played 39 minutes, 58 seconds. You look at Andre Drummond. He gave you 24 minutes, 22 seconds. Okay, LeBron obviously gave you 38 minutes as well. If you are able to keep size on the front line and you don't take advantage of it with your speed being smaller, it's going to compromise you. And I think that that's what the Lakers have to figure out. I'm sorry, the Suns have to figure out. I think Monty Williams will be able to figure that out, at least to get one more victory in this series, possibly two. But I'm going to stick with my Lakers prediction of going seven games, winning
still
seven.
Just so unfortunate they didn't have Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Poor Chris Paul,
and AD,
man.
He bounced back like we expected. 13 points game one, 34-10-7 last night.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
The Nets putting in that work. Joe Harris, 25, KD, 26, and right to a 22-point win and a 2-0 lead over Boston, who was without their star Jason Tatum while he was poked in the eye. Meanwhile, Brooklyn's Jeff Green left with a bruised foot. Max Kellerman,
yeah.
Are you impressed with Brooklyn or are you embarrassed for Boston?
No, I'm impressed with Brooklyn. Brooklyn can do that to anyone. Brooklyn can do that to anyone. You blink and it's a 10-point, 18-point. Like it's unbelievable. And what I say, I keep on bringing up Joe Harris because in the history of sports, when has there been a fourth option that's going to be wide open on every play like Joe Harris? Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The Brooklyn Nets are, I mean, they played together 8 games in the regular season and now a game in the playoffs. They barely played together, and I don't think they can be stopped. And I really don't think anyone can take them 7 games. Just on what I see, again, Joe Harris dropped 25 points. He did it as fast as you could blink. He was like, oh, my God, what are you going to do to stop them? Like, how do you stop them? What are they going to do to stop other teams? All they have to do is not be the worst defensive team ever, and they're going to be fine. I was very impressed with Brooklyn.
Why would you waste a minute and a half talking about Brooklyn like that? They ain't play. I thought you said the series was over in 3.
Yeah.
That they have no – so it's just that simple. And Jason Tatum got poked in the eye and there's no Jaylen Brown. This series shouldn't even be taking place.
Right.
It shouldn't even be taking place. We have not seen the Brooklyn Nets yet. Draw them, sir. Haven't even seen? Because what are they playing against? Boston has nothing.
I feel
bad for Boston because I would love to, I really, really wish Jason Tatum was healthy and Jaylen Brown was there and healthy. Because then, I'm not saying, I would find out a lot about Tatum and Brown even though they would still lose the series. The only thing that I have to say about Brooklyn other than that is, it's nice to see Blake Griffin playing basketball.
Are you more embarrassed for Boston?
No. I'm not embarrassed by Boston at all. They're hurt. They're not there. But remember with Blake Griffin, I was saying he didn't want to play in Detroit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that he couldn't
Turns
play.
Turns out he can still play basketball.
He can still play.
Yeah.
High basketball IQ for your 11th option.
Let me shift to something that you might actually want to talk about. So the series now shifts to Boston. Whether Kyrie's, where we know Kyrie's tenure didn't exactly end on a high note, he will now play in front of Boston fans. This is for the first time since leaving for Brooklyn now that the COVID restrictions have been lifted. Kyrie, he shied away from the mic lately for much of the season, but he certainly had some choice words for the city of Boston. Take a listen.
I mean, it's not my first time being an opponent in Boston. I'm just looking forward to competing with my teammates and, hopefully we could just keep it strictly basketball. You know, there's no belligerence or any racism going on, subtle racism and people yelling from the crowd. But even if it is, it's part of the nature of the game and we're just going to focus on what we can control.
All right. Let's bring in a man right now who won a chip in Boston. Kendrick Perkins, my guy. Good to see you again, back at the house. I always like to see that. Who wants to start on this one?
Yeah,
I'll start with Perk. Okay, Perk, cool.
Perk has played, so he would know.
What's your reaction to Kyrie's comments there?
Well, here it is, right? You have mixed emotions because, you know, first of all, you want to give Kyrie credit because he does a lot in the community. He does a lot for social justice in the community, and his actions are really in the community, all right? He goes out there. He always gives back. He always speaks up, and I get that, and I applaud him for that. But as far as my personal experience in Boston, when I was 18 years old, all I heard was that you're going to Boston, it's a racist town, you got to be careful. When I got there, it was a completely different story. Now, was it the case because I was a player? I don't know, maybe. But I've never in my 8.5 years experienced racism in Boston. And I just didn't. I mean, like, you know, it was to the point where I had some of my best years in Boston. Well, I would spend my summers in Boston. That's how much I enjoyed being in Boston. And I was like, it's not what people say it is. And if you look back and you look at guys that say things like Kevin Garnett at his Hall of Fame speech, he said, only regret I had is that I didn't come to Boston earlier. He loved the city of Boston. He loved it to this day. I understand we won a championship. But on top of that, I had my uncle named Kevin Cooper, who moved with me when I was 18 years old, moved with me to Boston when I first got drafted. Guess where he's staying at right now? In Boston. He's still out there. He moved out there with a whole family. He has a family now, about to be married and everything. I done been to the hoods in Boston, meaning I done went to Roxbury, Dorchester. I used to go out there every Sunday. I done been to all the other upper class communities. I stayed in one. I spent Thanksgiving I spent Thanksgivings a few times at white Americans' homes where they embraced me and my family, my neighbors. One of my good friends who was a white American died like 3 years ago, about 5 years ago, excuse me. We called him Piggy. He died of a heart attack. I flew down there and went to his funeral. Great man, great guy. Used to always have my kids over at his house. So I can't speak for Kyrie Irving personally, but I could speak for Kendrick Perkins. And I could say that I didn't experience racism. I actually had a great time when I was in Boston. I actually was around great people that were not the same color of me. And it was good.
Well, I can speak. I can speak about it. I'm not a former Boston Celtic. I know plenty of people who happen to be black that has spoken negatively about racism in Boston. I'm not going to say that it doesn't exist, but I'm going to tell you this. I think it's a phenomenal sports town. I think the actions of the few shouldn't taint the many. And that's why I'm going to say that Kyrie Irving was wrong to do this. He was flat out wrong. Because I don't think this is about race at all. When it comes, if you go to a Boston Celtics fan, when they are against you, it's because you're not a Boston Celtic. It's not because you're black. It's because you're not a Boston Celtic. Now, again, we got race issues in New York. We got race issues in Atlanta. We got race issues all over this country. So let's not act like it's confined to the streets of Boston, Massachusetts. Okay? And if you're Kyrie Irving, here's why he's wrong. He's negating his role in the vitriol he's received and he's anticipating receiving from the Boston fans. It was Kyrie Irving 2 years ago, October 4th, if I remember correctly. Brian Scalabrine was hosting, emceeing some event to the Boston Celtic fans. It was Kyrie Irving sitting there next to Gordon Hayward, sitting next to Al Horford at the time. And Kendrick Perkins, you'll remember this, Kyrie Irving stood up before the crowd and said, I have every intention on re-signing with this team, if you'll have me. And then he got up and left. Might that not have something to do with them disliking you? I think that might have something to do with it. And so when we look at it from that perspective, you are now the enemy because you decided to depart from them, to go to another team as a free agent, to coax Kevin Durant into coming with you, because that's why Kevin Durant's in Brooklyn, because Kyrie Irving wanted to be in Brooklyn. KP knows this. Everybody covering the NBA knows that. It wasn't the other way around. KP followed Kyrie because that's their boys, and KD wanted to go where Kyrie went, and Kyrie wanted to go to Brooklyn instead of MSG. It is what it is. The point that I'm trying to make is, sure, you can make a case. There has been some things that have been spewed in Kyrie's direction. I have no doubt about it. Racially insensitive, racist even, okay? But that doesn't speak for the entire city of Boston. And more importantly, I don't care who you are. You are white, you are black. If you ain't a Boston Celtic and you about to go against the Boston Celtics, whatever they find to talk to you, talk about you that they believe has the potential to get under your nerves, they will do that. Kyrie Irving knows that. Get on the court, handle your business. This was not the place or the time to bring up that when there's a history that shows
Oh, they're getting at you strictly for basketball reasons. Not because you're black.
The Chris Rock line. I'm supposed to be mad and politically correct at the same time, but I think this is actually a complicated issue, guys, because remember, Bill Russell, you know, he didn't want his jersey retired in front of the fans because what he had to go through. But why did he go through it?
There.
A lot of white America, period, wasn't ready back then for black stars. And the thing about the Celtics is, let me tell you a story. I once went up, I was uptown at some spot with Eric B. And Rakim. And Melly Mel was the greatest rapper of all time once upon a time. Melly Mel, this is going back, I don't know, 10 or 15 years at least. And I saw when I got to this spot, Melly Mel, who's from the Bronx, he's got a Celtics jacket on. I'm like, hold up, time out. When I was a little kid, I idolized this rapper. He's from the Bronx. And what are you doing with a Celtics jacket, Mel? He's like, always been a Celtics fan. Celtics started the first black starting five, right? So part of the reaction in Boston is because the Celtics trailblazed racially, and so they experienced more of a reaction. That's number one. But number two, we hear this from athletes from time to time through the years, not just Bill Russell way back in the day, but we've heard it from other athletes too. And you think maybe there is something to it. I don't think, probably it's exacerbated because in the 80s, the greatest rivalry ever, right? Lakers versus Celtics. The Celtics' biggest stars were white, and the Lakers' biggest stars were black. And so that kind of reinforced what had come out of the 60s and 70s, right? Where really they were really experiencing racism because of partly because of what I mentioned before. So it's not an easy issue, but I'll say this, Perk. Your experience is your experience, and I would never doubt that. But I hear enough coming out from athletes about their experiences in Boston that makes me think something's going on.
I want to ask you a question, and I understand, Max, that there's the history, but I want to get back to something Stephen A. said, and I want to get your opinion on this, Perk. Do you think by Kyrie this could potentially be strategic or calculated because the vitriol he might face when he returns to Boston and that he wanted to get ahead of the narrative here?
It is, and I was going to go to Stephen A.'s point and say it's a great point because my thought process was this. If the Brooklyn Nets were playing the Indiana Pacers or the Charlotte Hornets, right? Think about this for a second. It's racism all around America right now. It's been racism all around America. I grew up in Southeast Texas, in Beaumont, Texas, where they had 45 minutes from me the James Byrd killing, where the man was tied to the back of a truck and drugged for 10 miles or so, right? I grew up in an area where they have a predominant white area called Vida, Texas, where we're taught as African-Americans never to go there, Kendrick. Don't ever go there. Where they found a young black African-American teenager on the railroad track shot dead and nobody knew nothing. Nobody was charged. It just went a cold case. So we deal with racism everywhere in America. My thing is, would Kyrie have said that if they were going to Indiana? Would he have said that if they were going to Charlotte? It's racist people in Charlotte. It's racist people in Indiana. I've experienced when I've been in the Indiana series, okay, when we've been in the playoffs, and one of my teammates, and I would not say his name, had an alcohol problem, and everyone knew it, okay? And I've heard people yell crazy stuff at the stands. I heard a white American yell to him, knowing that this guy had an alcohol problem. Hey, such and such, you want a beer? You know what I mean? Just shoot little stuff out there like that. I mean, at the end of the day, man, look, you know what happened, Kyrie. You know what to expect. And this, to me, you got to take this heat, not racism, but you got to take everything that's coming for us, what this crowd is about to give you, for us booing and chanting at you and doing whatever, because you laid this bed, so lay it. I'm not talking about some racist slurs. I'm talking about the energy that you're about to get.
Yes.
Trae Young just embraced the hell out of New York.
He did. That's a good point, though, about Trae Young in New York.
They were chanting. I was at the game. They were chanting F Trae Young.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I don't care who you are. If you love sports, whether you are a Celtic or an enemy, you got to love playing in Boston because that crowd is something sensational.
Yeah.
And I will remind everybody, I also went to college in North Carolina. Okay. And I can assure you, you got some racist people down there. I remember a Duke game when Olden Polonese, I think, basically had an issue with at a record store, and the crowd threw records on the court. But in the same arena, Deadlift Shrimp came on the court playing for the University of Washington, and they were going at him, and he was laughing because nobody could understand what they were saying, and they were cursing him out in German. And the only person that knew what he was saying was Deadlift Shrimp. Everywhere you go, when you're the enemy, you're going to get treated in a certain way. Why are you bringing this up now? Kyrie is not right here. Not here.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. It is a beautiful day here in New York City. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers made his first on-camera appearance with Kenny Mayne on his final SportsCenter show, addressing the strife with the Packers, saying it's a difference of philosophy, and highlighting the first-round drafting of Jordan Love, saying it's not about Love, it's how the move was handled, not on the up-and-up. GM Brian Gutekunst has admitted he mishandled it as such. Here's Aaron's coach.
Aaron definitely knows how we feel about him, how he's such an important part to our football team, such an important part to our organization. And, you know, we're just going to continue to try to work through this and hopefully can get him back in the building at some point.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Keep in mind, the MVP quarterback is missing OTAs for the first time in his career. Super Bowl champ Jeff Saturday joining the program. Top of the morning to you, sir. Always good to have you. We'll get to you in a second. And I always like to remind everybody, you did play with Rodgers for a season. But I am coming to you, Mr. Smith. I always feel like this subject's a little personal for you.
It is.
Do you believe Rodgers will sit out?
I hope he does. And I think that it's an incredible possibility, because I think that when you feel disrespected, all bets are off. And I think that's the thing that people don't realize about this. Now, obviously, we've seen far more examples than not of people caving in. But that's usually because of financial situations. You want to make smart business decisions. You don't want to paralyze yourself and compromise your bottom line. But if you've been Aaron Rodgers and you've been in this league for 15 years and you've made an exorbitant amount of money, and then you're hosting Jeopardy and you had the highest ratings of anybody when you did host Jeopardy, and you talking about the potential of making 10 to 20 million a year hosting that show or anything like that, it's not like you're devoid of options. You have options. And when you have options and you compare that to feeling disrespected, that's when it comes in. What bothers me about the whole Aaron Rodgers situation is everybody acts like, well, you know what? It's about winning games, and that's all that it's about. That's not all that it's about with professional athletes. It's the priority. But when you come to work every day and you don't like where you're working, you don't like who you're working for, you feel underappreciated and disrespected, and then you start looking at your comfort zone. What do I have available? What can I afford to do? Because guess what? Some things ain't worth it. And I will remind everybody, and I'm going to bring this up, Jeff, Saturday. Irvin Magic Johnson was the president of basketball operations for the Lakers. Irvin Magic Johnson runs a $600 million a year business. He did not need the money. What happens? Stuff gets a little bit tight, a little bit too stressful, and out of the blue, the last game of the season, Irvin Magic announces, I'm out of here. And he comes on First Take, and he says, I don't need this.
He has options.
I don't need this because I have options. People are making a mistake when they assume megastars who've made big-time money just want to play so bad that they want to come to work every day to an environment they don't enjoy. Making them happy matters. And Green Bay's going to find that out with Aaron Rodgers if they don't know it already.
He's never going to have to sit out. I keep trying to tell people this. I'm like, I keep like, it's like knocking my head against the wall. He's not going to have to sit out. The Packers have to know that, well, was he going to, he's going to play, he'll be good. Sure. Let's say he decides to play. Can you win a Super Bowl with a quarterback who you know, who's publicly stated, I don't want to be here? You can't. You're not going to win a Super Bowl that way. And this team is built to win a Super Bowl right now. They keep knocking on the door. NFC Championship games. So what will dawn on the Packers eventually is that Rodgers flipped the script on them. You know, the Packers thought, we are going to determine the end of your tenure here. It's up to us. And what Rodgers is demonstrating clearly to the Packers, if they haven't gotten the message yet, believe me, it'll dawn on them eventually. Rodgers decides. He chooses. He's going to get to choose. What do I mean by that? He's going to instruct the Packers where he wants to play next year. I guarantee you he'll be playing for whatever team he says. It's the Packers' job to convince him to say the name Packers. In other words, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Packers, if they humble themselves publicly, can convince Rodgers to stay, but then he will choose to stay. Or he will tell them, trade me to the Broncos or whoever. And I guarantee you that's where he goes. The same thing I said about Harden in Houston. Same thing I said about AD with the Pelicans. What those teams didn't understand early on is that player will absolutely and necessarily instruct them, this is where I'm playing next year. And it's 100% certainty they will play there next year. Because all they need to do is let the other teams know, no, I don't want to play there. And they're not going to give up the farm for them. And you can't win with a guy who doesn't want to be there. Rodgers will play for whomever he wants. The Packers' job is now to convince him, the deciding one, that it should be Green Bay.
Listen, I totally hear what both of you guys are saying. And I do, Stephen A., your point about him being disrespected, totally agree with you. I've been saying it the entire time. Here's where the argument for both of you guys and mine differ. When you look at the who you are doing it with and not necessarily the what, the who isn't just the Packers organization. He has relationship with all of those players as well. The four or five other guys who didn't go to OTAs, the receivers who didn't go to OTAs, David Bakhtiari, the starting left tackle, the defensive guys, the equipment guys, the trainers, the food service. So everybody in the building knows Aaron Rodgers and have been around Aaron Rodgers for the last 16 years. He cares about those people. He just said it when he's on there talking to me. He cares about relationships. Well, his most important relationships in his adult life have pretty much been in Green Bay. So does he like the GM for the Packers? I don't know. But can he win with that guy? Absolutely he can win. He just did it last year. Look no further than last year. You think he was happy-go-lucky every time he walked in that building thinking about what they had done drafting Jordan Love and the way they had gone about it? Absolutely not. But is he a professional enough to continue to win as a Green Bay Packer? He absolutely is. And I think when all of this boils down, I think the loyalty he will have to the teammates in the building, the Davante Adams, the Jones, the guys that he's been playing with, and they're right on the cusp. Right, if Bakhtiari is healthy against the Buccaneers, they probably end up winning that game and playing in the Super Bowl. When your left tackle goes down and the Buccaneers, dismantle you and get sacks all over Aaron Rodgers. But this team is that close. Guys, when you go to start to rebuild, he has to go rebuild all of those relationships. Whether you believe it or not, when you walk in that, excuse me, when you walk in that building, you have to start and foster new relationships. He already has those built in Green Bay. So as disenfranchised as he is right now with the organization, with the front office, with Mark Murphy or whoever else he's upset with, I think if those guys do exactly what you said, humble themselves, get it right, he is in the best position to win and win with the guys that he knows and he wants to go win with, right? He understands how close they already are. So I understand he's been disrespected. I completely agree with it. I do believe it's a relationship, but I think it's going to go even a step further for the guys that he's playing with, that he looks sideline to sideline with and in the huddle each and every Sunday and Monday night.
Well, the only quick comment I'd like to make to retort that is that, Jeff, you know this. Aaron Rodgers knew all of that before he took this position. He's been biting his tongue for years. If it was something that just happened and it was just impromptu and it was an emotional reaction, I get where you're coming from. But if Jeff Saturday was inclined to take this position, I have to look at Jeff Saturday's career. I have to look at the amount of time you spent in this position with these players before you finally decided to speak out. I'm saying that all of those things, in my opinion, were taken into consideration before he decided to take the position he took publicly. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing quickly to wrap this up. Oh, do you want to respond, Jeff? Go ahead if you do.
Yeah, no, and listen, Stephen, that's well put. The only difference I would say is he knows from a leverage perspective, he's got the GM where he wants him. And a public apology of, hey, I really messed this up from a relational perspective, and here's how I'm going to be better moving forward. I'm new to this as well, I think is ultimately what's going to spark the relationship to at least get it where they
can
get back
Gutekunst
in the building
together apologize?
And move this thing forward.
Do you think Gutekunst is going to apologize?
Hey,
I do.
Listen, he absolutely should. And you know why? Let me tell you this, too. Think about Jerry Jones a long, long time ago when on these Super Bowl runs. And pride jumped in front of it with Jimmy Johnson. And look at what has happened to the Cowboys. Look no further than that. One of the greatest franchises, one of the greatest runs. The Packers are forced to be in that same type of vein for you to just act like pride is going to over. You better know Jordan Love is going to take you to the next level. Otherwise, you have sunk the ship that you're ultimately trying to be the captain on. No way. If I'm him, I'm apologizing. No questions asked.
Let me just say two things quickly. Gutekunst has already said he mishandled the Jordan Love drafting, or at least how he communicated that to Aaron Rodgers. And I also want to add, I mentioned that Aaron Rodgers isn't at OTAs, and he normally is. His top receivers aren't there either. So what kind of position is that also putting that's Jordan right. Love in if he is the guy that's going to be under center? So it's a hot mess there, and it shows the loyalty also to Aaron Rodgers.
Well, Packers will do as told.
Well, you said
Rodgers will tell him what to do.
Well, Molly, you said Gutekunst, you know, he's already apologized, but apparently he's not good enough.